Stormers? What stormers? But how about those Irish women, eh? It's time to start harping on rugby. My name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to Harping on Rugby, where with the help of some fellow fans, I get the chance to harp on what's going on with Leinster, Ireland, and the wider rugby world. First up, joining me this week is the host of the excellent multi-sport podcast, Post to Post Sport. He's making a 17th pod appearance to go with a host of written contributions over the years. Warm welcome to Mr. Kieran Duffy.
Yeah, more of a blog than a podcast these days. We fluctuate in our phases of what we're doing, but safe to say, Harping on Rugby is the Pro Six Nations Rugby Championship, and we're the European Super Cup second-tier competition when it comes to rugby coverage.
Well, I understand you've introduced a new feature called Rugby Bullets. That's the thing you've been doing recently, yeah?
Just basically bullet points on whatever rugby issue there might be. So, for example, last week it was all about Leinster going down south, the Irish provinces going down south in general, what kind of teams they bring. Basically, I can't be bothered writing long articles anymore. I had enough of that with Harping on Rugby, so I'm doing bullet points now.
There you go. Well, check it out. The link is in the program notes. And also with us is someone earning cop number 11. Hello to you, Mr. Jay Long.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Karen. Hey, Keepin. Thanks for having me back.
Welcome. Good to have you. And later in the pod, we'll get an extra contribution from Tom Coleman, who was there to witness what can only be called the most absolute of scenes at the Kingspan Stadium. He'll be earning his 54th cap. Okay, so there's no putting this match wrap pod off for any longer. Let's just get this done. Our feature match of the week was, of course, DHL Stormers versus Leinster, which was played on Saturday evening at the DHL Stadium, a.k.a. Newlands, in round 15 of the 2023-24 BKT United Rugby Championship. Now, for obvious reasons, we're not going to spend too much time harping on this match. We just want to give a general overview of what went down. But I'll start with just a bit of a tangent. During the week, I watched Groundhog Day for the very first time. I guess I was holding out to be the last of my generation to take that particular box. But anyway, well, trust me, I'd much rather dedicate this part of the pod to a movie review. Instead, I'll point out that much like Bill Murray's character, I got a serious sense of deja vu from last weekend watching this match, Kieran.
Yeah, in fairness, I think with the South Africa tour, it's come at a bad time for us the last while. Well, a bad time in terms of using the South African tour as anything else than giving young players caps. So in terms of this match, I mean, it was a pretty much first half was pretty disastrous. We just didn't get anything going at all. And to be honest, Stormers could have been further ahead. Second half, you're thinking, right, come out with a big performance, do the basic things well, which we didn't do in the first half. Didn't do the basic things well. Too many unforced errors. If you're not doing if you're playing a team like the Stormers in South Africa, and you're not doing basic things well, and you're not just getting the very basic things right, then you're not gonna do well. You're gonna lose comprehensively, as we did in the end. But that's maybe understandable for these mostly young players. Then coming into the second half, we had that bit of a flurry, that kind of first quarter or third quarter, first half of the second half. It was fairly. I mean, we came back into it, two quick tries. Looked like, could there be a comeback on? Could there even be a try bonus point here for us? And that would have been a massive point to take. But in the end, it kind of fizzled out. And then the Stormers ran up to score at the end. Yeah, like you said, a bit like Lions last week. You know, first half was, we just weren't competitive at all. And that was actually probably a stronger team than the one we had out this week. Looking at, like, it's easy to say in hindsight, you know, at the end of the day, if Leinster go on to win the Champions Cup, then if Leinster go on to beat Northampton next weekend, then suddenly that's justified. If we go on to win the URC as well, then suddenly no one's even thinking about the South African tour. It's just a bit of an annoying blip in the season. But really, when you look at it, there's kind of that question of, well, obviously you have to travel quite a long distance. The squad left the Tuesday after the La Rochelle game, so didn't have the full week to prepare for the Lions game. And then suddenly had to turn around quickly to Stormers with even less players available because we were playing Northampton next week. So, like, you kind of look at, is it worth it for these, like, I wouldn't even call them second string players. I'd say they're third, fourth string players, academy players. Some of them may not even get into double figures in terms of Leinster caps. So that's no disrespect to them. That's just the nature of Leinster. Leinster is a very difficult team to get a run of games in. I mean, and we talk about squad rotation, but even still, the 50 or so players we tend to use are quite high quality. So it's not like everyone's getting hand. It's not like we're desperate for players. So, you know, a lot of these players might be moving on. A lot of these players might be going somewhere else. So I'd wonder what it does for them. Does it act as a big blow to them? Then again, you know, I think it's no harm, especially for Leinster and Irish rugby players in this generation, to suffer the odd defeat, suffer the odd hammering. No one likes getting hammered, but maybe sometimes it can do something good for you in the long run. I mean, I always think looking back in that kind of 2018 era, kind of between 2016 beating the All Blacks in Chicago for Ireland, 2018 Leinster winning the European Cup, Ireland winning the Grand Slam. Everything was going quite well generally. That was 2018 was an amazing year for Irish rugby. And then as soon as things started to go a little bit difficult, they started to go really difficult and really badly. And suddenly players like Jordan Larmour, who looked like I think we all thought Jordan Larmour 4 years ago would be a star of the last World Cup, and he wasn't. I think the same with Joey Carberry, the same with, you can name a few players. So sometimes these players need a setback, and sometimes it's no harm having that setback in a game like this where, look, we weren't taking it seriously. Leinster didn't go out to lose the game, but it was a team that was going to find it very difficult to win the game. And sometimes it's no harm having those games against very difficult opposition that just build that bit of character. But it's that kind of thing could also have the opposite effect of making everyone to play rugby again. Probably one that the end justifies the means a little bit. I mean, if we're going to win the Champions Cup, if we're going to win the URC, then sure, no one's talking about this. So
yeah, I mean, the way the European rugby season has always been is, like, if you're doing well in both competitions, you're going to find yourself selecting with selection dilemmas in around April and May anyway. But then when the South African teams came in, it compounded that even more. And it's like the South African. The team that we put out against the Stormers, the Stormers equivalent players, they're getting ready for the Currie Cup. You know, they're the Western Province and playing in that. It's a different calendar over there. So if we played them earlier in the season, if we'd gone on the trip earlier in the season, it would have been the other way around. The test players would have been rested from the rugby championship, and it would have been different sides. It just depends on what way. And this is the third season in a row Leinster have played their tour at the end of the season. Now, of course, that sounds like sour grapes, but it's just stating a fact. It's the way the league is. It's not perfect when you've got five countries, different continents, different hemispheres. That's the way the calendar is gonna shape up. In terms of the actual game, Jay, though, like, you know, was there? I'd say, well, over the two matches, I'd say really only Max Deegan really would have maybe stood out as, I mean, he was heavily involved. He got a few steals against the Lions. He was involved in both of our tries there on Saturday. Any kind of positives to be taken from the two matches?
Yeah, I wonder, would we have actually been better if the same side that started this weekend actually started both games? Because I think there was churn in terms of, it was a reasonably, like, I know these guys are training each other the whole time, so it's not as if they're, you know, walking and meeting each other for the first time in training, but it was a relatively new Leinster side who went down and faced the Lions. And then the bee's nest was kicked again, a load of lads, you know, nine changes or whatever. So there wasn't the ring rust we kicked off in the interim. There was new ring rust again. There was a new, there's new combinations everywhere. So in terms of positives, yeah, as you said, I thought Max Deegan was very, 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 very good. I really liked the look of Sam Prendergast yesterday. I thought he looked really well. You know, I thought he kicked really well. He looked a little static at times, but then again, we were being battered left, right, and centre. So he was doing his best. Some really, really nice touches. I thought Rob Russell played really, really well. It's difficult to pick many, many positives, but I suppose there was plenty of individual pieces of brilliance and you know, guys shining brightly. But I think we struggled to get enough lads having pieces of brilliance, or even at sometimes basic competence, to be totally Frank about it in terms of horrible passes over the shoulder and bounce balls and drop balls. It was prolific, but we struggled to be able to get enough of those guys having a bit of a turn at the right time that makes things stick. And you're only ever as strong as your weakest link, you know. All it takes is that one knock on, it kills the momentum, it kills the head start going down. Like, I think the perfect example was just the start of that second half. That was the most un-Leinster-ish try to give away. We've seen them give those tries away at the start of the game plenty through the season. It's a bit of a meme for me now that we're definitely going to concede first. I don't know, the guys have to work on that, but I mean, at the start of the second half, that try we gave away where the heads were just switched off, that's when I knew it wasn't going well anyway, but that was the worst possible start of the second half. And so un-Leinster-ish, you would have expected Leo to go in there and I don't know if it's a hairdryer treatment, he doesn't seem the type, but whatever, the Leo Cullen equivalent of a hairdryer treatment,
yeah.
A very stiff upper lip talking to or something, I'm not sure. Yeah, like, I mean, it's plenty of experience, like, you know, obviously Gus McCarthy and stuff like that, getting their caps. I'm sure the guys are, you know, it's probably maybe better when you're getting two Hydens like that when you're away on tour. Because one, you get to kind of try right the wrong straight away. No, it didn't work out that way. But then again, you're back with the boys in the hotel. You're probably going off having a crack for the swim, you know, you're not going back to it. And the young lads, some of them are probably still living at home or whatever, so they're not going back to sit alone in the room or like that. They're around friends and stuff. So yeah, I'm sure, like, there are very few of them are probably going to think about this result for very long, but especially you can only hope that like the Reese Ruddock and the kind of more seasoned campaigners would kind of walk over and tell them what did it, let the guys know what it is, like, you know, they kind of took one for the team here, as Kieran illustrated very well, you know.
Yeah, and like also as Kieran said, it's a good experience for them because, and you know, in previous years we had all these, you'd have like wins in the URC and Pro 14, whatever the iteration was, and you'd win 50, 60 nil, bonus point wrapped up before halftime, all those kind of stuff, and in those games we would still make mistakes like we saw on Saturday. There'd be knock-ons that seem to make no sense. There'd be lineouts that go scaways. There'd be all these different things happening. And you'd be pulling your hair out at the time, but then the final result, you'd forget it. But when you're playing a team like the Stormers, almost a full-strength Stormers, or even the Lions last week, they're going to punish you. They're going to punish that every single time. You know that if you drop one ball, you drop one pass, then all of a sudden they're down the other end. Two offloads and some support play, they're down the other end going over your line. And it's you know, that can help them as well in the long run. So, you know, it's... But it was just the fact that even the score lines were almost exactly the same. That the like you said, the first try, the opening try in the first minute was almost exactly the same, or the first few minutes. They got the first score in the second half. It was just like a straight rerun of the previous week. But still, look, you know, we would, if in an ideal world, it would be nice to see Leinster just once, maybe next season, get the tour earlier in the year. But another feature for Leinster as well is because we're in both competitions, we do have to think about our team. And we saw what happened to La Rochelle coming, traveling to Dublin or to Cork first, then Dublin for that match that week. And that can have an effect. So we're not going to put our Northampton team on the pitch in Cape Town just 1 week before a big semi-final. I mean, that's just common sense. That's not disrespecting the competition. That's just, you know, being smart and doing the schedule the way you can, you know. But listen, you know, it was what it was. We, like I say, the tries we got, we persevered, we got them, and it did look for a while like maybe that we could claw back a point or two, but then the last quarter was what it was, and they pulled away from us. And listen,
yeah, that's the scrum call, right? That's kind of when that's we let the iron go totally cool at the scrum call where we had a penalty and then Malherba just rolled on, and Malherba was Malherba for the rest of the game. But we just, I feel like we just let one go there. You know, we could probably could have pushed that one a little harder, yeah.
Probably. But listen, I'm sure we don't want to talk about this anymore.
Oh God! So,
no. I'll let you out of your misery, and we'll wrap that up. We'll wrap that part of the pot up. And the final score, we'll just have to say it out loud, I suppose, one last time: Stormers 42, Leinster 12. Well, before we return to the pod, first a little reminder of all the different places you'll find us in the Rugger Sphere. First of all, we have a radio slot every Friday after the 5 o'clock news on Dublin South 93.9 FM. Then when it comes to online, as well as our main site at harpandrugby.com, we also have a presence on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and new this season, we're on both Threads and Blue Sky. So if you're on any or all of those platforms, please do give us a follow to check out our full range of Leinster and Ireland rugby content. So with Glasgow getting a comfortable bonus point win at Zebra, they now have overtaken Leinster at top of the URC, and they have a 4-point cushion with three matches to play. We're also looking over our shoulders at Munster's win at the Lions moves them to within a point of us, with the Bulls just two further back. Now it's Warriors' turn to go to South Africa, where they'll play the Bulls and the Lions, while we host the Ospreys when the league resumes in a couple of weeks. Meanwhile, both Ulster and Connacht did their top eight qualification chances the world of good with bonus point wins, although both Benetton and the Dragons finished within seven. So lads, starting with yourself, Jay, it's definitely been a bad couple of weekends for Leinster, but overall, it's always good to see all four provinces in top eight contention.
Yeah, I mean, most Ulster and Connacht fans will be the first to say how disappointing it is, and Munster fans, obviously, that they hadn't progressed further in the kind of European side of things, or I suppose champion and challenger, should say it these days. So that is a bit of a letdown. So it's really nice to see that, you know, there is Irish representation in the kind of, or at least very strong potential that there's going to be strong Irish representation in the knockouts of the URC, because that's a sign of a healthy union, right? That's what you want to be. You want to be there at the business end, and particularly Munster. Like, you know, you have to give it to them. They've had their fair share of injury woes this season, and to be 1 point behind Leinster at this stage in the game, like, was an incredibly strong tour. 10 points from South Africa has to be said. That's season defining stuff. And they're, you know, they're right, you know, they're, you wouldn't put it past them now to top the log, maybe, depending on how the next couple of weeks go. So that's particularly impressive. But yeah, Connacht and Ulster, they're starting to, I suppose, get some results, which is what it is. I mean, Connacht wasn't particularly pretty against Dragons at times. They nearly Connacht themselves to a certain extent. Although word for JJ Hannon, hopefully his injury isn't as bad as it looked. And Ulster as well wasn't particularly crisp at times on Friday. But look, they won't care about that. It's you know, 5 points in the log, and they move on. They're in the top eight. That's great to see. And you know, and they're good sides, particularly Ulster. We've been saying that forever, that they're not, that they don't seem to be the sum of their parts at the moment, and they're starting to come together at the right time to a certain extent. So who's to know? I mean, once you get into knockout rugby, you just have to start stringing the results together. I mean, look at Munster last year. They tipped the apple cart over and just went and won the thing. And who's to say any of the other eight, you know, seven sides can't do it this time as well? So, oh yeah, for sure. We because, as you said, it was a small worrying sign that we didn't have more Irish representation in the knockout sides of Europe. This at least is showing that the guys, you know, we're still firing on some cylinders, which is important for a strong union here. So yeah, absolutely delighted for our fellow provincial fans that they're here with us.
Yep, they all did well over the weekend. Ulster's win over Benetton. I mean, Benetton and another URC team with a semi-final next week, and they feel they have a good chance of getting to the final as well. But they put up a strong showing against Ulster. Ulster did really well to stay with them, and they pulled ahead. Now, it was a couple of late tries that got kind of close towards the end, but they got there. And like you say, Munster, just two weeks in a row. Obviously, they brought a much fuller squad down to South Africa, but fair play. They still had to go and get the results. It was by no means easy, even with the full strength team, and they ground them out. Two big wins for them down there, and Connacht as well, you know, staying in and around that top eight. So yeah, what do you make of the URC the way it is, Kieran?
It's my favorite league of all them.
It's the best league.
It's the best one.
It is the best league. Well, it really is, because it's probably the most difficult to win. I mean, we've seen that, like, we saw that last season. Leinster won, I think, every game aside from the very last one in the league. Again, that was like sending the under-18s down to play Bulls, and then sure, get knocked out in the semi-finals. It's not as easy to make it easy to win it, I suppose, is what I'd say. It's never easy to win a rugby competition when it ends in playoffs. Like, at the end of the day, if it was a case of whoever finishes top just wins the league, then, you know, that would be that would be a different story, and teams would use the games differently, I suppose. We'd probably see a different layout with who plays who and how many times. But, you know, it's really important for us to have four strong provinces and them all be in the Champions Cup. Not a fan of the Champions Cup format, the last 16 team, that's a discussion for another day. But, yeah, look, it's just the nature of the UFC now that at the end of the day, you could finish second place, have a great quarterfinal, great semifinal, but then you could have to travel to a separate hemisphere. You could have to travel the length of a continent to play the final a week later. That's going to be very difficult unless you're pretty much getting on the plane the second after the game. So yeah, I'd say it's the most difficult competition to win in a lot of ways out of all the leagues. One thing I would put in, this is probably an off-season conversation. You know, I love my nice format conversations. Would it be worth having the playoffs hosted in a designated country? In the designated, so for example, have the quarterfinals, semifinals, and final, have them take place in either South Africa, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Italy, have them take place there to avoid any kind of concern around traveling. And that kind of plays into what I was talking about, maybe having a separate cup competition. But then again, I'll say anything to talk about formats. So for now, I'll just say, look, it's great to have the four Irish provinces in the playoff positions, despite the rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, it is very close to the top four. And then there's, like you said, there's a big group from fifth all the way down to, I think the Lions are even still within a bonus point win of the playoff places. So a lot of twists and turns for the final few rounds. So it's all to look forward to for sure. Okay, so now it's finally time to start talking about something good that happened on Saturday. Although, first to set the scene, I want to go all the way back to September 2021, on the very first weekend of the very first United Rugby Championship. I was at the Aviva Stadium watching Leinster comfortably dispatch the Bulls by 31 points to 3. And with the match decided in the closing stages, I was one of many in the stadium who chose to get on our phones and watch the final few minutes of the Irish Women's World Cup qualifier being played at the same time, which was ironically against Scotland. We were 18-13 up as the clock was ticking down, but the Scots got a converted try right at the end to pinch the victory and qualification right out from underneath us. Now, as we all know, since then, there were more dark times to come for the women's game on these shores, as the men had a real purple patch, I might add. But on Saturday afternoon, with almost perfect symmetry, it was a win against Scotland that put the girls through to the 2025 Rugby World Cup to be held in England. I'm going to ask my guests for their thoughts in a bit, but first we'll hear from another contributor, Tom Coleman, who was actually at the Kingspan Stadium and filed this report for us.
Hey, Jeff, just sending a little post-match report from Belfast. Yeah, absolutely fantastic day up in Belfast here. There's about 7,000 turned up to Kingspan to shout on the girls in green as they tried to get World Cup qualification and a third place finish in the Six Nations after last year's disastrous year. The first half, I suppose, the big downpour in Belfast about 5 minutes into the game, and the bad injury to the Scottish number nine, who went off after a long break in play, was probably broke up any sort of rhythm that was in the game. In the first half, a sort of Ireland struggled to get their phase play going, and some wayward kicks were sort of handing back territory to Scotland a lot throughout the first half. We did have a lot of possession towards the end of the second half in that second quarter. Huge amount of line-out maul play. I thought some super line-outs. I thought Niamh Jones threw some great line-outs. It was Ireland had some really good complicated moves that paid off pretty much every time, apart from maybe one overthrow just near the end before half-time. And they were unlucky not to finish a few of those chances before half-time. I thought the referee was maybe a little bit lax on Scotland, were repeatedly offending in and around the maul as we were trying to get that sort of important score before half time. But I think the game really kicked to life in the second half. Tullow's own Katie Corrigan was only 19. I've been lucky enough to see her come up through the ranks at Leinster as you know, involved with my own club at youth level, and it was fantastic. She looked a bit nervous in the first half, probably. Obviously would be so, like she may be doubting whether she should be at this level, but once she got the try, I think it just kicked on from there. She was full of confidence, full of running. She ran a lot harder and a lot straighter and started to cause the Scots some problems, and started to see a lot of the play we would have seen at underage level throughout Leinster. I think the girls, the Irish women's team, definitely dominated the second half. I think the Scots, apart from the last couple of minutes when they were trying to get back into the game, they really had only one entry into the 22, and unfortunately we gave away a soft enough try to let Scotland back into the game, a sort of 12-12 draw. And it was nervous then after that. But Cleona Maloney, who came on, Railways replacement hooker, who came on for Nave Jones. She had a few dodgy lineouts, but apart from that, I thought her general play, she carried hard and added a bit more oomph to the Irish pack, badly needed for the last half an hour. I thought Enniscorthy's own Aoife Wafer was outstanding again. She's just the amount of, you know, she's the Irish version of Quagga Smith, just the amount of rooks and general play that she gets through. She bounces up from a tackle. She's there for the next phase immediately. She just gets through some amount of work. Absolutely fantastic player, and probably Irish player of the tournament for me anyway. But we eventually got our just rewards. We got another try from Cleona off a lovely move. And that really set us up for a grandstand finish. The crowd, you know, a lot of busloads. You know, there was a lot of busloads outside Ravenhill that had travelled from all over Ireland. I seen teams from Mullingar and from Terenure and Galway that had travelled up to watch the game, as well as our own club. We had 25 players up at the game, so it was a great occasion and a great atmosphere to finish off the game. I suppose the most important thing for me was just seeing the light in the Irish supporters' faces for the girls after their win, because, you know, they've made the effort to get up to Kingspan for the game. But the absolute joy on the Irish team's faces when the full-time whistle went. You know, if you play any sport at any level, taking a beating like they did in Twickenham, you know, is very, very hard. Nobody wants to have 88 points stuck in you. So the amount of work they put in during the week, and the relief that they were able to turn that around with a W, and most importantly, get World Cup qualification, was just outstanding. And the atmosphere at the end of the game was electric. Everybody was just, you know, it was a fantastic, fantastic win, and really worth the effort to get up to Kingspan for the game. So after last year's sort of hard year, it was just brilliant for the girls to really, you know, finish third in the Six Nations. They'll still be disappointed with a few performances. Maybe the Italy game, they started really well in that game and didn't put away some chances and convert it, and sort of Italy came back into the game. But we do know England and France are ahead of the rest. But I think after last year, I think the team just getting together and putting that sort of effort back in to finish third and get World Cup qualification, and just the joy it meant to them. You just see on the pitch how absolutely ecstatic they were. Was just fantastic. So yeah, this is Tom Coleman, your Harping On Rugby reporter, signing out from a very, very happy Belfast.
Many thanks for that, Tom. Well, Ciarán, it was definitely a boost for the women's game that was really needed.
Yeah, absolutely was. I mean, I remember, I think you can go back to kind of 2017, that World Cup hosted here in Ireland. You're thinking, you know, I think leading into the World Cup, people who, like, I wouldn't have as much knowledge about the women's game as the men's game, but I'm thinking, look, this Ireland team won the Grand Slam in 2013, won the Six Nations in 2015, has been consistently competitive in the Six Nations, can make an effort to get to the semi-finals here. Obviously, now this is the old format where it was three groups of four, so only the top teams in each group and the best runner-up go through. But you're thinking, look, we'll at least finish second in the group here, have a chance of getting out of the group, and if not, be in the fourth place playoff or the fifth place playoff. But in the end, to not even qualify automatically for the next World Cup, I remember interviewing Jenny Murphy a little while after that, and look, she made no bones about it. She said it was extremely disappointing, and, you know, it was hard to, I think, in fairness, I think a lot of players weren't in the position to talk about what was going on, what was going wrong. But it just seemed like there was an awful lot going wrong. And, you know, the last few years have just been turmoil. And as bad as it was to not automatically qualify for the World Cup, to not achieve automatic qualification from the World Cup you were hosting for the next World Cup, and to not even feature, it's really bad to miss out on the next one entirely. And, you know, you basically, Ireland had two chances. I mean, finishing high. We didn't actually. It was purely based on the playoffs. You know, you think we lost to Spain, who aren't in the Six Nations. That's something I think might be a bit of an issue, and maybe the Six Nations shouldn't necessarily, in the women's game, shouldn't necessarily have to follow the men's format because the best teams aren't always going to be the same. But, you know, just the nature of going out with a whimper in that, in those World Cup qualifiers, and just that realization, hold on, Ireland aren't going to be at a Rugby World Cup. That's like in any, whether it's men or women's, that's unthinkable. That's crazy. And then it was just a slump after that. And it seemed like nothing was going to get better. I mean, bit of light then in the WXV, which I think is a great idea for a tournament. I think it's better than the Nations League that's been brought in for the men's, to be honest. And I'd love to see an extended version of it with maybe more teams in each division brought in for the men's to allow for promotion and relegation straight away. But the bit of light there, having won the third division in that, still, again, you're thinking, look, Ireland are playing in the third division of a three-tier competition. It's still not great. So, yeah, look, it took a bit of heroics. It wasn't a perfect Six Nations by any means. I mean, I think, you know, from memory, we were reasonably okay against France, considering the massive gap in professionalism. And then, you know, just absolutely destroyed by England, which I don't think actually helps England in the long run, the fact that they seem to be way ahead of everyone else, the Six Nations. And maybe, again, that's something the WXV will help with. But to go from rock bottom and looking like there's no, kind of almost like the equivalent of Italy in the men's game, what they've been, where teams might be saying they should get relegated and put Spain in there instead, to go from there to finish third. And that was, in fairness, the refereeing wasn't great at times in the game. I think, to put it lightly, I think Scotland got away with an awful lot. But, you know, it's a massive achievement. And, you know, now there's something to work towards. There's something tangible to say, look, we're building to have a good performance in the 2025 World Cup. And it's only across the water, so plenty of fans to get over there as well. So, yeah, it's a great victory for Irish rugby and one that's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, compared to last season, you know, obviously finished rock bottom and lost all our games. And this year, they did make changes. They brought the sevens players back in, the likes of Eve Higgins and Bavin Parsons. That was a big deal. Cleena Maloney came back into the side. They are making the changes. It's kind of a slow process, and the result against England showed just how far we have to go just to reach the standards that the Red Roses have set for the whole sport across the world. But still, the fact that we still finished third in the competition, it was a bit of a shock earlier in the day when Wales beat Italy, but that opened the door for us, and they really played well. Like you say, there were some questionable decisions towards the end of the first half in the sense that Scots kept giving away penalties and I think they had got two warnings in and around the 22 towards the end of the first half, and they just wouldn't give the card. Now, you know, we were making mistakes and the Scots were getting in for tries, and Scots were good as well. Scots had some really good players. Their number 12 was really strong in the carry, and you know, it was a really tight game throughout, but we came out strongly in the second half, and some great defense at the end just got the win. Now, what did you make of it, Jay?
Yeah, it's just so refreshing to be able to talk about the women's game in a positive light again. Just a great new start, and I suppose it's the people, really, right? It's just it was so fitting that it was Cliona Maloney with that kind of scoring that equalizer try in the second half. Like the emergence of Aoife Wafer, you have people like, you know, Sam Monaghan there. It's just strong characters that this team can build on now and move forward. And yeah, and look, we can compare ourselves to the Red Roses, but I mean, you have to walk your own path, right? They're in a different league at the moment, and we just have to accept that. And as Kieran said, it's kind of, we get to play them. We get to you know, lay our yardstick out beside them, and continually reach there. It's like us playing the All Blacks, the men's game, playing the All Blacks. All those years where we kind of knew what the result was going to be, but we could see incremental improvements, and you know, you kind of have to hitch your wagon to the stars there and work towards it. But yeah, it was fantastic, and I suppose that last defensive set, the girls were playing for each other. You know, we got a yellow card, but it didn't faze them. You know, to get up to go after that line out. You know, fantastic. Just a great gutsy play. You know, display at the end. But I suppose in terms of the IRFU sense, you know, it's, you know, putting it lightly that they've mishandled the women's game for such a long period of time. But hearing some of the whispers from the camp, and I think it was Aoife Wafer did an interview during the campaign, that she said they felt really well supported by the IRFU at the moment. Now, I believe that and take that with a much smaller pinch of salt if I heard that from someone of, you know, a bit more tenured, I guess, who someone who have maybe spent more time in both regimes. If I was to use a probably a particularly dark term for if I heard, you know, Sam Monahan come out and say there's been a tangible big difference, or you know, Lindsay Judang say that, probably would mean a bit more. But I mean, a positive is a positive. And either way, for coming out and saying it, you know, it's not a bad sign. But I suppose this is just the first point on a graph. You know, the WX competition was fantastic, but obviously the standard of opposition was questionable. Big step up now with the different one we're going into. But in terms of this is our first point on the graph of the standard of opposition that we want to be gauged against. And it was a positive outcome. And the slope of the graph needs to ever increase. And the IRFU needs to understand that this is just, well done, this is page one of this new chapter that we're trying to write for the women's game here in Ireland. So, but yeah, fantastic. Great to see. I was in a park screaming my head off. So if there was anybody in that park in Kildare, that was me. But yeah, brilliant. Fantastic. Delighted. And a World Cup to look forward to as well. So,
yeah. Definitely. I mean, it's like you say, it's all about the support they're getting behind the scenes. And that support needs to go right the way down to club level as well. There's a lot going on, or a lot not going on at club level. That's and, you know, there's still a lot of work to do. I mean, we had the club final in the same weekend as the Six Nations, which is kind of a bit of a disconnect as well. You'd like to think that they're, because in the women's game, the top players do tend to line out for their clubs a lot more, obviously, because the provinces don't play as much. So there might be a little tweaking around to do with the calendar just to get that right. But still, I think the important thing is that when we get these results, which gets the attention of the fans that are listening to podcasts like this or watching, you know, that might have tuned in to watch and they'll see the win, that's one thing, but then you got to build on it and you got to make sure that the standards are improved for next season. And then when they are ready, when we do get to the World Cup, they're ready for it. You don't just qualify and think the job is done, which I think might've happened in the past when we had such good teams winning Grand Slams and getting to World Cup semifinals, you know, about a decade or so ago. So it's all about how we bring it forward. But listen, for now, this result has been brilliant and it was a great performance. And they to pick themselves up after what happened at Twickenham and grind out that result was against a good Scottish team. It can't, you know, it has to be said. They've had some good results as well in this competition. It's great. It's great for the women's game. Like you say, it's good to have something positive to talk about it for once. And like I say, just hope they build on it. So fingers crossed, and we'll see how they take it forward. Okay, so now we're going to go back to the Leinster men's team and the small matter of a packed house in Croke Park next week for the visit of the Northampton Saints in the Champions Cup semi-final. The Saints also lost this weekend, but they're still top of the Premiership and, like us, have won all their Champions Cup matches this season so far. Now, I've been watching the Saints' recent matches, but with the Bulls sending a weakened team for that quarterfinal and with their cushion at the top of the Premiership table, allowing them to rotate some players in their domestic fixtures, I reckon the best way to get a sense of what we might face at Croker is going by their performance against Munster in the last 16. Now, many times on this pod, we've discussed what teams need to do to get at the first choice Leinster side. And what we generally agree on is that you need at very least two things: a defense that's as stubborn and as disruptive as ours, and an attack that can be lightning quick in transition. And I have to say, particularly in that match against Munster, the Saints had both in abundance. Their back row is as tenacious as they come, with the likes of Courtney Laws and skipper Lewis Ludlam. And then in the backs, just one mistake can see their halfbacks like Tom James and Finn Smith bring their pacey back three into it before he can blink. So while we can all agree Leinster have impressed with our knockout win so far, we'll definitely need to perform at those levels again this Saturday. So looking at Leinster side of things, Jay, starting with yourself, do you expect any surprises in our lineup or our approach?
No, I don't think there'd be many surprises. And I think by very fact that the dour start to the pod in terms of the selections for the South Africa tour, you know, you can kind of fill it out by who wasn't there. And you've seen, you know, Caelan Doris was chilling out in Mayo while the guys were down south. So there was a reason why we just went through the last 2 weeks of absolute torture. So I think we can broadly see that there won't be massive changes. What will be interesting to me, maybe, it'd be interesting to see where Jason Jenkins is next week, given that he was on that tour and he put a decent shift in the weekend. So he'll have some miles in the legs after flying down from South Africa. Him being the starting option in the second row with Joe McCarthy versus La Rochelle, maybe suggest that and Saints being the type of team they are, this may not need to be as big a physical battle as we booked out for La Rochelle. So it'll be interesting to see what the bench split is, simply because we may not need that 6-2 for this game. And in fact, it's probably better to have some more back support because they are quick. Finn Smith, Ram, Forbank, they're going to run us ragged. They're going to be running us all day. And if we give them an inch, they'll take a mile. But as you said, Courtney Laws, you can't give them. Courtney Laws is a tenacious man himself. Slight home is very, very dangerous. So I think we might be looking at a more conventional 5-3. Jack Niemeyer slowly biting his tongue, wanting to go to full eight. but no, I think we'll go 5-3 this week. But in terms of who's there, I see no reason to change the core personnel, particularly around maybe starting 15 with Hugo back. So I think we'd be looking at the same starting 15 that we thought we'd have for La Rochelle before Hugo's injury. But no, I don't think we're in for a massive amount of surprises, and I hope we aren't. Otherwise, I'll be having conversations with Leo as to why he made me just watch the last 160 minutes of rugby that he made me watch.
Yeah, no, it's like we're going to have to see what they do, but I think you're right about the bench. It's a different kind of team we're facing. And like I say, Munster played well that day in that last 16 match, and they kept it close for a while. And, Northampton can be got us if you play it right. But like I say, the reverse applies as well. And if we're not at the top of our game, if we can't find those levels we found when we played Leicester and La Rochelle in the last couple of rounds, then they will punish us. I mean, it's not we're going to have to make the most of our home advantage. I think we're going to need another player of the tournament level performance from Jemison Gibson-Park in particular. Like I say, the strong team, it'd be interesting to see how he factors in that team and who he's getting back as well. We're hoping, fingers, toes, eyes, everything crossed for the likes of Hugo Keane and maybe even Gary Ringrose. Jimmy O'Brien might all be in contention, by next week. We'll wait and see. But it's going to be interesting how it lines up. What do you think, Kieran?
You mentioned Gary Ringrose there. I think it's interesting whether or not he actually, it'd be unthinkable to say he wouldn't be in a European Cup semi-final squad a few seasons ago. But in fairness, he's been out injured for a while, and he wasn't on great form before the injury. So maybe you stick with Osborne and Henshaw there, and maybe Ringrose comes back in for if we make it to the final or for the URC playoffs. So there are a few conundrums, and it's probably something you have to be privy to more information than we are to really know what the squad's going to be like. I'd agree with. There's no need to go for a 6-2 split. I don't think it's that type of game. I think we'd benefit more from having three backs. Obviously, like if Jemison Gibson-Park injuries aside or anything like that, or red cards or anything, you're hoping he plays the whole game. So you're still gonna have a scrum half. Then I'd say Ross Byrne is gonna. You're still gonna have a scrum half on the bench. I mean, Ross Byrne is gonna probably start. I mean, he was player of the match against La Rochelle. Very happy for him to get that player of the match. I think he's been unfairly criticised. Looking back, I mean, he had a poor performance in the final, but at the end of the day, he hit the post for two very difficult conversions. One of them goes over. Suddenly, he's the second choice fly half for the World Cup in all likelihood. I think he's been hard done by people covering the sport, for one bad game and for not becoming the next messiah to Johnny Sexton. But in fairness, I think he starts. Him and Jemison Gibson-Park seem to be our best combination there. Fullbacks, yeah, I probably would go with Osborne and Henshaw just for this game and bring Ringrose back into next week. And again, put a chip on Ringrose's shoulder. I mean, tell him, look, you're not guaranteed a place to come back in, so like do well in these next two games. And then you're looking at the backs, like it's probably going to be pretty much as it was, aside from Hugo Keenan coming in. Kieran Frawley's going to be in the squad somewhere. I think it's no harm. It's kind of for players like Frawley, it must be frustrating to always be in squads but not always be starting. And he may not, like Harry Burns, probably going to be on the bench. Frawley,
I'd say he hates the number 23.
I'd say he does. He's not going to come on probably as a fly half either. So, you know, he might end up playing in the centre or as fullback. So, and that's the thing. Does Hugo Keenan have 80 minutes in his legs after being out injured after having a couple of knocks this season? So, you know, there's a few things there. Forwards are interesting. I think in a way, the second row is the big one. You know, again, like Jay pointed out, Jenkins was away in South Africa. I can't see him starting considering he was away for both games. But I think we can't afford to start slow. I think we can't afford to start the way we started against Leicester in the last 16. You know, if we start that way, did Northampton side are better than that Leicester side, and we weren't at our best against that Leicester side. So you know, at the end of the day, this is a different kind of narrative. I don't think many people in the know anyway are expecting Leinster to go and absolutely hammer Northampton for 80 minutes. It may be a case where in the last 20, 15 minutes, Leinster put a couple of scores on Northampton and the game's won by 15 points and it looks more comfortable. But I think the 60 minutes before that won't be comfortable. I think there'll be an hour there. It's very difficult rugby. I do think Leinster have the quality to win it, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be easy, and we can't let Northampton build a lead of any kind. I mean, we can't let them do what we've done to La Rochelle the last few times, the varying results of put a couple of points on them and make us chase the game. But I think you know, it has to be a good start by Leinster, and the discipline has to be good. We won't see any of the mistakes we saw by players who won't be in the squad in South Africa. But you know, we have to have a good set piece as well. So, yeah, going into the game, I think if we win this, nearly in a way, just because this is our first game back in Croke Park, it's potentially more difficult than a game against Toulouse or Harlequins in the final, because we've beaten Toulouse a few times over the last few seasons. That's not to say they're not a good team. We've just beaten them. So, in a way, this is nearly the biggest test of the season now, especially coming off this South Africa tour that was very unsuccessful. So this is a very pressure situation to be in. Northampton have no pressure. They're going to a sold out Croke Park, biggest stadium in Ireland. They're not under any pressure to do well here. And winning the Premiership would be good for them. But yeah, I'd agree with that 5-3 on the bench, and probably pretty similar team, pretty much the team you'd name off by heart, aside from maybe I think Brett or Gary Ringrose is fit or not. I don't think this is the game to throw him in. I'd say, you know, we need a big game for Lowe as well. He obviously, he talked there a while ago about he was carrying an injury to the World Cup. He played in the European Cup final last year and, you know, you could tell he was just back from injury. He didn't do well. And I think he's one of those with a chip on his shoulder as well. He's I think he said he's played 3 European Cup finals and hasn't won one or something like that. But he's... yeah, a big performance could be needed. It's kind of performance Leinster are capable of putting in. Keep things tight for 60 minutes. Keep putting the pressure on. Defensively solid. Frustrate Northampton as well. Don't let them counterattack. And then, you know, just try to build a score then towards the end. At the end of the day, it's not going to rugby. It doesn't matter if you win by 1 point or 20 points. But I think Leinster will win. I don't think it'll be any kind of a breeze. I don't think... I'd say there are a few sunshine supporters going along to Croke Park for the big day out, as there often are in the RDS when things are going well. They weren't there for that era before Leo Cullen that we weren't talking about. But, you know, they might be expecting Leinster to be you know, be 40 points up by halftime. That won't be the case, though. It'll be far from that. I think it'll be a really tight first half. Might even be a game of penalties and the odd try. And then second half, you know, I'd be happy if Leinster went in ahead by any means in the first half, even by 1 point, and then push on the second half. But I think it's really important not to give Northampton an early lead, because like Jay said, we've been guilty of giving away the first try in games. I think that could settle a very long road up if we give away the first try on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a good point, because the Croke Park thing, everyone's thinking of it as a really, really big positive. But 82,000 people could be very, very loud if it's going well, or could be very, very quiet if it isn't. And then it nearly works against you that you have those eyes on you. It's a different situation. But
that point as well, it's not a packed RDS here of diehard Leinster fans for a big European game in January or something. This is 80,000 Croke Park fans. Not all 80,000 of these have been watching Leinster all season. Not all these 80,000 would have been, you know, going to a game against Zebre in the URC or back when it was the Pro something. You know, I remember being in RDS's when the stadium was half empty, when things weren't going well. It was 1 year we even missed out in the playoffs and things weren't going well by our standards. Suddenly then supporting Leinster wasn't fashionable. And that's the thing that, you know, if things start going badly, then suddenly you're hearing whispers in the crowd. You're seeing the crowd get emptied for people going to get their pints, which they can't have in the seats, apparently. But you're seeing, suddenly the atmosphere turn sour. And I think that's what Northampton have to do from their point of view to win the game. They have to kind of get at Leinster from the start, score an early try, make the atmosphere turn sour, because 80,000 people, but how many of them are diehard Leinster fans, and how many of them are people going for a nice big day out to Croke Park? So the atmosphere could go either way. I don't think it's guaranteed to be in Leinster's favour at all.
Well, whatever about the atmosphere on the day, I mean, one thing's for sure, if there's anything to get us through this week after two disappointing defeats, it's the prospect of a European semi-final, Croke Park, 80,000. Just be looking, it's really going to be the buzz is going to get bigger every day going through the week. And listen, really looking forward to it. So it should be great. Listen, lads, we're going to leave it there. Many thanks again to Kieran and Jay for joining me. Thanks again, and I hope to have you back on again soon. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Jeff.
And as for our next batch of Harpin, look out for our 80 plus column during the week. Then we turn our attention fully to that semi-final at Croke Park. We'll have a preview on Friday and we'll be recording the wrap pod on Sunday evening. As ever, keep up with our content at harpinandrugby.com and across our social media channels. The links are in the program notes. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.